faith, especially in communities of color, which are being most impacted. And we can afford to do that.
When the Supreme Court struck down the moratorium put in place by the Biden administration last month, the majority opinion contended the agency lacked the power to implement it. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, September 21st, 2021. The news is produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, I'm Paul D'Arienzo. Thanks for listening.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Previous program was the WBAI Evening News, heard daily at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for... Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion Radio coming up.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the rebellion.
Good evening. This is Elise Lane from Extinction Rebellion Radio. You know, Matthew and I have encountered some technical difficulties, which is not surprising given that we record from different parts of the world. As a result, we're going to rebroadcast an interview we did earlier this year with Larry Ward, author of the book, America's Racial Karma, An Invitation to Heal. Now, next week, we'll have an awesome show for you. It's the first in a series on militarism, war, and our climate catastrophe, a subject that deserves both our scrutiny and direct action. Until then, please enjoy our interview with Larry Ward. Be well.
Welcome to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency.
Today, we are speaking with Larry Ward, co-founder of the Lotus Institute, which offers Buddhist practice for change makers on the journey of individual and collective liberation. In the year 2000, Larry was ordained to teach by Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh. And we'll be speaking with Larry about his new book, America's Racial Karma, An Invitation to Heal. Larry, welcome to the rebellion.
Thank you very much, Elise, and thank you, Matthew.
So we're going to start off talking about your book, and then we're going to guide you, if that's okay, into a conversation that extends its thesis out to the issue of our climate crisis. Is that okay? Okay. Now, can you explain to listeners what you mean by America's racial karma? You know, what is karma? What is racial karma? And what is the specific American character of racial karma?
By karma, I mean the action that proceeds from intention that creates patterns of suffering.
So you're speaking specifically from a Buddhist cosmology.
I'm speaking specifically from a Buddhist cosmology, but I can also go through it from a neuroscientific point of view, and some other ways. But the point of this is one of the things the Buddha did was redefine karma from his Hindu history and say that intention was the foundation. What we intend with our lives, with our speech, with how we think about things and how we behave has consequences. And those consequences live longer than we do. I hardly know where to begin. Let's just, pick a Black person who was just assaulted, killed, hurt, an Asian American elder who just been punched, attacked. Take any one of those examples. Take a transgender beloved one, also threatened, killed, and mutilated. And all of that has to do with an addiction to otherness. And this addiction to otherness has been cultivated. So it's conditional. Now, as human beings, we are always learning and we have ways of understanding ourselves as separate from one another. But it's quite another manner to be conditioned to not see humanity in anyone else except yourself. That takes work. That takes systems. That takes education. That takes art. That takes literature. That takes economics and all the systemic pieces. That takes police and all the systemic pieces that keep the wheel turning of tragedy. Mm-hmm. So my point about the wheel is it we move from your intention and then you create a story about race. And of course, you're at the top. And everybody else has this thirst for superiority and status that comes out of ancient Europe energy. Mm-hmm. Now, again, we all have that in us as human beings. But the colonial mind took it to a whole nother level of horror.
As in, those who are at the top are those who are creating the stories, structuring
exactly.
The narrative.
Creating the narrative and benefiting from the narrative they created.
You've talked about repeating patterns. You've already referred to the karmic wheel, a certain circularity. In fact, as we've been talking, you've been moving your finger in a circle to indicate the circularity of it. Can you elaborate now on this karmic wheel, a concept central to Buddhist cosmology? It plays a major role in your book. Explain to listeners how we understand America's racial karma better when we notice its repeated patterning, when we notice its circularity, when we apply the karmic wheel concept to it.
Okay, so let's just take the year 2020 and pick any murder of an African American. Mm-hmm. I know what's going to happen when that happens. It's the same thing that happened 300 years ago. It's the same thing that happened 400 years ago. It's the same thing that happened 200 years ago and 100 years ago and last week. It is responded to with force, with condemnation, with hatred. And that force and that pattern creates trauma in everyone involved, especially the victims. And then that whole narrative frames the victim's trauma as if that's their normality. Mm. And that story carries on. So I always look at things in the news and the media and books or whatever, and how is this framed? When I look at a movie, I see who the criminal is.
Right.
Et cetera. I am conscious of everything is in a frame. And I learned when I was quite young that those frames are human creations. They are intentionally created in terms of race in particular. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, then we have a commission and then we have a meeting and then we have protest and then then before the funeral is over, it happens again. This is the pattern. And I've gone back through history, newspapers and articles, and as soon as things were able to be published in the 1800s, et cetera, same pattern. Mm-hmm. I haven't even mentioned, you know, Greenwood and another spot in Florida that was massacred. So, I mean, it's just a continuous turning of this wheel, and it will only stop turning unless we take charge of it and create a different set of intentions and actually go to work on making those intentions come true in real life.
Larry, you mentioned the trauma, and I just wanted to come back to that for a minute. One of the things, so this is hard for me to reconcile the trauma you're saying, because basically you're saying that everyone is traumatized, and I can see that. But I'm also wondering about the pleasure that those who traumatize get. So it's hard for me to see the trauma in someone who's an oppressor, who is turning this wheel deliberately, who, for example, the officer who put his knee on George Floyd's neck, the pleasure of that he had, the pleasure that he had in that, where is the trauma in that?
Well, that's a great question. And for me, when I use the word trauma around race, I look at it through three windows at the moment. The first is the victims. And by trauma, I mean the biological dysregulation of human nervous systems. And so what I was trying to say is the dysregulation of your nervous system by the entire journey of enslavement to today has consequences that kill us, consequences that, and this is intergenerational, it's not just individual. So there's that trauma. Then there's the trauma of the witnesses, the people who were frozen, their nervous system was froze, or they came for the party of abuse and hatred. And I don't have any doubt when I look at the nervous system, there are chemicals and hormones released in violence that people get addicted to. But that does not mean they are traumatized, not traumatized.
Okay.
Their trauma is that addiction. And so here in America, for example, the perpetrators are so traumatized, they never feel safe. No matter how many guns are in the house, never feeling safe.
Mm-hmm.
And safety is a fundamental experience for one to heal trauma. And so I see why it's so difficult for us as a collective here in quote unquote America to change, because you have to come out of denial.
Right.
You have to be willing to feel your pain and your sorrow, your own pain and your own sorrow. And in order to begin that process of learning how to restabilize your own nervous system, to self-regulate yourself. And my view is we have to learn how to self-regulate at a much higher level than any period of human history, or we will not succeed in co-regulation.
You're listening to WBAI's Extinction Rebellion Radio with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. And we're speaking with Larry Ward about his book, America's Racial Karma, An Invitation to Heal. So I have another question for you, Larry, and let me just grab it here. So in his article, White Supremacism and the Earth System, Nafis Ahmed writes that the crisis of white supremacism is not solely an American problem and is not solely about race. Indeed, the crisis of white supremacism is also about the Earth and how American racism represents our broken relationship with our own planet. Now, in this piece, Nafis Ahmed, he ties together, among other things, the Black Lives Matter protests that took place last summer and our climate crisis. Can you talk about America's racial karma, that turning of the karmic wheel in terms of our unfolding climate catastrophe?
Sure. The first thing I would say is, and I've been asked that question before and previously, and my first response is that the history of race in America is no different than the history of how the colonial mind has treated this planet. It is the same mind. It is the mind of acquisition. It is the mind of extraction. It is the mind of predatory profiting. From any piece of matter this mind can get its hands on. It's just astounding that we continue to live in this illusion. And so this extractive nature, this go get them and sell them, mm-hmm. just like a tree,
mm-hmm.
just like apples, this mind of white supremacy treats everything as an objective matter that can be commodified.
Mm-hmm.
People, earth, sand, water. And so it's that same sense of not being connected to reality,
mm-hmm.
for me, is what's at the bottom of this. I just find it astounding that people don't realize we actually live on the earth and not in their heads.
So there's this acquisitive mind or an acquisitive mentality that produces or contributes to both America's racial karma and the climate crisis, in a matter of speaking. Now, it seems logical. I'm going to say this, and I want you to critique it. So it seems logical that to improve our mind, we can change our intention, and that will help us to solve the America's racial karma, or improve it. That will help us to solve the climate crisis. Now, there's something in Buddhism 101, we pursue enlightenment by eliminating desire because desire is the cause of suffering. Don't we have to desire to solve these problems, to create an intention? How do we create intention? How do we improve our mind without a desire to do so? So don't we have to take affirmative steps? So take us beyond Buddhism 101. How can we eliminate desire and address problems like climate change and address problems like racial karma? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Thank you.
So for me, it's not a question of whether desire or not to desire. It's a question of the quality of that desire, the intention of energy and attention and focus behind that desire, and the impact of that desire as it manifests itself in the real world and in your own body and in your own mind. So that's one piece of it. The next piece of it for me is, and I know this has been happening and people are doing it and you're part of this, but I'm learning to develop what I call a body-centered eco-spirituality practice so that every day I have a sensory experience of being connected to the miracle of the whole earth. And that shifts my perception about not who I am as much as what I am. I am part of nature itself. It is not something out there. The environment is not out there. It is in here and all around us. But to think of it as an object outside of us that we can control, we can certainly impact. That's the message that we've been trying to get communicated. Our human lives have impact on this precious sphere we live on. And it would take the same kind of courage. The opposite of what we see in the movement to block voting is the same energy we see in the movement to block significant changes in our Earth way of being as systems, as communities, individuals. And so from the Buddhist point of view, for me, it is what I'm working on is combining my Buddhist practice of mindfulness with my understanding of the neuroscience of trauma. And through that process, learning really to fall in love with the natural world every day. And my respect for all beings I encounter around me and near me where I live and even where I don't live has meaning for me. It is not just an object. It is a relative. And that shift in perception that comes from deep spiritual practice when it's grounded in our own bodies can, for me, help us understand how to release our trauma.
It sounds like a decolonizing project. Yes. Or practice, I should say. Now, in your book, you offer nature as a space that can be a source of healing, as you're talking about, from our racial karma. And I'm going to read just a small bit from a poem you have in your book called When I Became Currency. Okay. You write, "I am a class of color created by a colonial mind missing its own self-worth. But the dance of my ancestors in my bones have kept me awake and kept me alive. I live beyond such limiting constructs of mind. I am free because I am not confused. I am stardust awake. I am the earth and sky embracing all. I ride the wind with the eagle and the hawk. I flow with the rivers into all oceans. I touch the sun and am touched by the moonlight like all beings. I am nature herself, awake, powerful, resilient, generative." As a former English professor, I love that. I'm wondering if you can elaborate more on this idea of nature as a source of healing.
Well, I've had the good fortune in my life to live and work and serve people and communities and organizations in many places around the world. So I've been able to live in many, many different environments, deserts, jungle, mountains, rivers. And what I began to experience through this process of working in villages or especially in rural areas around the world in Africa and Latin America, et cetera, is I felt safe under a tree. I felt safe sitting on a rock. And I realized that I had never been rejected by a tree, never condemned by a rock, never disrespected by a bird. And so as I learned to interact and get more comfortable with the natural world and beings that are around me, I discovered my daily practice of safety is renewed and restored. So when I walk out of my house into the world, I at least have a sense of safety in myself. Mm-hmm. My nervous system is stabilized enough to handle the chaos of the day. But I keep practicing throughout the day, so I'll take a break and take a walk, and especially paying attention to what is around me, what's on the ground, what's growing, what's dying, what's blooming. And then I take that as a great mantra from, I think, Hinduism. It translates as, I am that. Mm. So when I see the agapanthus fading, I realize I'm not different than that. when I see the hummingbirds in the morning coming by to our patio, our little garden, and it's just, I wonder how they survive, how they do that. And then I think, well, I don't know how I do what I do either. So I'm just happy to be alive. So I'm seeing nature as a teacher, as a guru, as my dear friend, and as a partner in healing and transformation.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. This week, we are speaking with Larry Ward, Buddhist teacher and practitioner and author of the book America's Racial Karma.
You know, Larry, what strikes me about this idea of nature as a source of healing is the fact that Earth, and of course, along with that, other sentient beings, that Earth is suffering, and that suffering cannot be disentangled from America's racial karma. For example, a state inaction on climate change is driven in large measure by men and women who are deeply invested in our systems of subordination.
Right.
So the practice you suggest is for us to go to a suffering Earth for our own healing. How do you hold both Earth's healing power and its suffering? What practices would you suggest that might transform both Earth's suffering and our own suffering from America's racial karma?
One of my practices is walking meditation, and I just don't mean how it's commonly understood. I mean it at a level of energy, not just body movement. And one year, maybe 15 years ago, a group of us were with Thich Nhat Hanh in Korea. And a group of monastics and temples had asked us to join them in a walk to stop development of a tide pool being overrun by commercialization. And then I saw a whole group of people who would walk three steps toward the tide pool, bow, stand up, take three more steps. And every step they took, the trucks and bulldozers got less and less interested. Or the Buddhist Peace Fellowship many years ago was known for sitting on railroad tracks during the Vietnam War to stop trains from delivering weapons. Mm-hmm. So how we use our bodies to practice is the only tool we have.
Describing in part a kind of mindful collective action in civil disobedience. One of Extinction Rebellion's main tactics.
And I know there's an emergence of eco-villages around the world, kind of different kinds of experiments on farms, collective and individual and family, gardening, cooperatives blooming in LA. We are on it. You're on it. The question for me is, are we capable? And when I look at how to answer that question, I come back to trauma. Because when we are in a traumatic state, and there's basically three of them, we're either frozen in place, immobilized, overwhelmed, our body feels shut down and depressed and low energy, or we're in the other realm of our nervous system reaction where we either fight or flee. Mm-hmm. And that in the white supremacy model is designed to keep us in these two states, either immobilized mm-hmm. or in burning our energy in either fighting or fleeing, but still on the same game board. So for me, unless we change the game board, we won't get anything new. Mm-hmm. We will repeat our neurological habits, which are both impacted by, you know, America's racial karma and everything else in our life. But our neurological habits as consumerism, going back to desire and our definition of what it means to be fulfilled as a human being. And so we need a new narrative so that we can see our biology is not disconnected from our psychology, not disconnected from the earth, not disconnected from technology, and not disconnected from spirituality or history. It's one interactive matrix. And our trauma and our capacity to change will not shift, in my view, unless we develop a new matrix, which I think you are working on.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
Queremos nada. Queremos todo el mundo.
Abortion rights are under attack as never before. The most extreme abortion ban is now law in the state of Texas, depriving millions of women of reproductive freedom. Next month, the Supreme Court will hear a direct challenge to the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade decision that legalized abortion. Forcing women to have children against their will is a form of enslavement that no one should accept. That's why I'm inviting you to join me, Sansara Taylor, for a two-hour special town hall edition of We Only Want the World on the abortion rights emergency this Tuesday, September 21st, from 7 to 9 p.m. here on WBAI in New York City and WPFW in Washington, D.C., featuring a legal update from Dahlia Lithwick of Slate.com, a message from the courageous abortion provider, Dr. Warren Hearn, and a roundtable between Sam Goldman of RefuseFascism.org, Tony Redtree of RevCom.us, and Michelle Chai of the Los Angeles Revolution Club. That's this Tuesday, September 21st, from 7 to 9 p.m., right where you have your radio dialed.
The 2021 local station board elections are underway. Two parallel, separate elections amongst listener and staff members are electing 9 and 3 members, respectively, to be seated on the local station board. Need help deciding who to vote for to represent you on the local station board? Visit elections.pacifica.org for links to audio and video materials, including candidate statements, forums, and debates. There you can file a ballot request to get a copy of your ballot or even reset your vote if you made a mistake. Members without access to the internet can call 510-993-0320 to leave a message for the election supervisor. Paper ballot replacements will be issued through October 1st. All ballots must be received by October 15th, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time to be counted.
When trumpets were mellow and every gal only had one fellow, no need to remember.
Hi, I'm David Kenny of Everything Old Is New Again. Every Sunday night at 10, please join me then, and please support WBAI at our brand new old number, which is 212-209-2950. Again, that's 212-209-2950. Hey, it's our old number, but it's new again, because everything old is new again. I like it.
The previous program was Extinction Rebellion Radio, heard Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI Evening News. Stay tuned for Susara Taylor's